These intense debates about the political leadership of the Ummah played a role in Islam that was similar to the great Christological debates of the 4th and 5th centuries in Christianity. The ascetic spirituality of Sufism had its roots in this discontent. Sufis turned their back on the luxury of the court and tried to live as austerely as the Prophet. They developed a mysticism modelled on his night journey and ascension to heaven. The Shia, the self-styled party of Ali, Muhammad's closest male relative, believed that the Ummah must be led by one of Ali's direct descendants, since they alone had inherited the Prophet's charisma. Shi'is developed a piety of protest against the injustice of mainstream Muslim society and tried to return to the egalitarian spirit of the Quran. Yet while these and many other movements looked back to the towering figure of Muhammad, they all took the Quranic vision into entirely new directions and showed that the original revelations had the flexibility to respond to unprecedented circumstances that is essential to any great world movement. From the very start, Muslims used their prophet as a yardstick by which to challenge their politicians and to measure the spiritual health of the Ummah. This critical spirit is needed today. Some Muslim thinkers regard the jihad against Mecca as the climax of Muhammad's career and fail to note that he eventually abjured warfare and adopted a non-violent policy. Western critics also persist in viewing the Prophet of Islam as a man of war and fail to see that from the very first he was opposed to the Jahili arrogance and egotism that not only fueled the aggression of his time, but is much in evidence in some leaders, Western and Muslim alike, today. The Prophet, whose aim was peace and practical compassion, is becoming a symbol of division and strife, a development that is not only tragic, but also dangerous to the stability on which the future of our species depends. At the end of my first attempt to write a biography of Muhammad, I quoted the prescient words of the Canadian scholar Wilfred Cantwell Smith. Writing in the mid-20th century, shortly before the Suez Crisis, he observed that a healthy, functioning Islam had for centuries helped Muslims cultivate decent values, which we in the West share, because they spring from a common tradition. Some Muslims have problems with Western modernity. They have turned against the cultures of the people of the book and have even begun to Islamize their new hatred of these sister faiths, which were so powerfully endorsed by the Quran. Cantwell Smith argued that if they are to meet the challenge of the day, Muslims must learn to understand our Western traditions and institutions because they are not going to disappear. If Islamic societies did not do this, he maintained, they would fail the test of the 20th century. But he pointed out that Western people also have a problem, an inability to recognise that they share the planet not with inferiors, but with equals. Unless, Cantwell Smith concluded, Western civilization intellectually and socially, politically and economically, and the Christian Church theologically, can learn to treat other men with fundamental respect, these two, in their turn, will have failed to come to terms with the actualities of the 20th century. The problems raised in this are, of course, as profound as anything that we have touched on for Islam. The brief history of the 21st century shows that neither side has mastered these lessons. If we are to avoid catastrophe, the Muslim and Western worlds must learn not merely to tolerate, but to appreciate one another. A good place to start is with the figure of Muhammad, a complex man who resists facile, ideologically driven categorization, who sometimes did things that were difficult or impossible for us to accept, but who had profound genius, and founded a religion and cultural tradition that was based not on the sword, but whose name, Islam, signified peace and reconciliation.